because when we think about delivering the gospel, we think about talking about sin and salvation, redemption and restoration. That's what we're taught to spit out when we talk about propagating the gospel. But I want us to start thinking about backing that truck up, because if you don't believe you have a sin problem, if you don't believe there is a right and wrong, then you don't believe you have a sin problem, then you are miles and miles away from a Jesus Christ solution. And we have to be patient with people, because especially in American society, we have lost the idea that there is a right and wrong, that there is an absolute. And we have to patiently work with people to say, but actually you really do believe there is an absolute.
Welcome back to Study with Friends. This week, we continue to discuss justice and right and wrong. Instead of our traditional biblical approach of going through a book of the Bible, we're beginning with a more universal approach as a tool to begin gospel conversations. The ladies are using C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity as a guide for their discussion. If you missed any part of this series or would like to get the homework to follow along, go to our website, studywithfriends.org. We're also available in podcast form. Feel free to look us up on any of your favorite streaming devices like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher. And now let's continue our discussion on justice.
I say this to my kids a lot. Actually, do you want to be right or do you want to be in relationship?
It is true.
So please be thinking about that as we develop this toolbox for you, which I hope will lend itself to everyday interactions and conversations. Don't abuse the tools. Mm-mm. They are sharp and useful. Don't hurt people with them. And also remember, these things don't happen in one conversation. Greg Kokel, who wrote a book called Tactics, said a great analogy: just put a stone in their shoe. Mm-hmm. And what he means by that is, when they walk away, be like, something isn't right with what I thought I believed before. Mm. I'm a little thrown off. Mm-hmm. But what I thought I believed, you know, Marilyn, Caitlin, Gianna, or our friends in the radio world, podcast world, has presented something to me that I hadn't thought of before. And that's bothersome. And remember that in the same way, no one's going to rock your worldview in Jesus Christ in one conversation, but they might give you something you have to think about that you hadn't thought about before. Mm. You know, worldviews are tightly held. So you're not going to like argue somebody out of it. You'll have to take your time, listen for opportunities, pray that God and the Holy Spirit prepare your mouth, prepare their ears, and take your time. It's going to take time. Okay, so back to this right and wrong. So what I want to say, following up that warning, is now you can start to listen for ways that people justify behavior, okay? We'll gently tiptoe our way into race relations, okay? And then we're going to yank ourselves right back out, because I don't want to spend the entire time in race. But an idea of fairness and how people of color have been treated in our country, one of the first things that people do is they make excuses. This is a beautiful opportunity, not only to help them understand the global truth about race relations, but also to help them understand whether they believe in the God of the Bible and Jesus Christ or not. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is they're making excuses. Anytime you hear somebody making an excuse or giving a reason for why they didn't behave a certain way, just be thinking about, is this a time, is this an opportunity for me to jump in there with this absolute truth of right and wrong, and how that necessarily points to a God who authored the right and wrong. So we'll flesh this out more so that you can see that it's not just a social construct or something that all societies taught their kids, that it truly does point to a God who authored the right and wrong. Rabbi Zacharias says, if you believe in a moral law, you must believe in a moral lawgiver. So let's talk that through. But any other examples of how we see examples of fair play coming up in everyday life? Anything you can think of? Let's think about it in the positive. So we're thinking of it in the negative, like, I did this for you and you didn't do this for me, or you took my seat on the bus and that's not cool. Let's think about it in the positive.
Mm-hmm.
In my marriage, my husband has a servant's heart. He loves to help me. He is really good at helping me. He is thoughtful. And as a result, I want to be thoughtful of him. That's a positive example. Like, he's so kind to me. Of course, you know, you wouldn't want to return kindness with meanness. That would be wrong. Mm. We would all agree that if someone was kind to you and you bit their head off, that's wrong, right? Mm-hmm. So this reciprocal in the kind way, you know, of someone treated me kindly and I'm going to treat them kindly is another good example. Okay, so C.S. Lewis calls this the law of nature, the law of human nature. Can you guys tell me, this is where we have to go in, now we're going to really get into the deep, this is the harder part to wrap your brain around. So we're going to take our time getting into it. Tell me what's different from the law of human nature. What's different about that law than other laws of nature? So if we think about what we just talked about, the law of human nature, which is right and wrong, what's different about that versus, say, the law of gravity?
What we believe is the standard may vary in the situation where with a law of science, if you jump out a window, gravity is going to be there, right, and you're going to fall.
Whether you like it or not.
Right. Mm. So if we said it more concisely, if I'm hearing what you're explaining correctly, tell me if I sum it up in a different way correctly. With the law of human nature, we decide whether or not we want to comply.
Yes.
With the law of gravity, we have no such choice. Right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's really, you can really see that because throughout history, just thinking of any, you know, different culture, there are different, quote unquote, standards and morals that, like, change with the times. Like, even if you want to look at, you know, beauty standards, that goes from one thing to another. If you want to look at, you know, legal standards, that's always changing throughout history. And so it's very, very evident that humans don't have to follow certain rules because some of them don't.
Yeah. And like also with that, there comes like the issue of like people that don't follow the rules where like it's messed up, or it could be for the good. So it's like,
yeah, there are people who, yeah, there are people who break rules and it ends up being good.
And then there's the
Martin
other
Luther
people.
King. Like, you know, like there are
okay,
people
but
who
listen, the rules that Martin Luther King broke were not human rules of right and wrong. They were socially constructed. Mm. And he objected on the deeper rules of right and wrong. So what he was going against was, and of course, the Freedom Riders and the people of color who went and sat at the diners and places they weren't allowed to sit, that's a social construct. You're not allowed to sit here. That's not the fundamental rule of right and wrong, which is, so Martin Luther King helped us as a culture go deeper and say, he is a human. What's right is treat him equally. So he was appealing to that deeper truth that goes beyond a social construct. So again, if I drive on the left side of the road in America, that is wrong. Mm-hmm. But it's not fundamentally human nature wrong. It's just wrong because it breaks the rules of that situation.
Right.
Like what Marilyn was talking about earlier. We have a situational set of rules with the tape on the floor. But that's not fundamentally human. That's not wired in my soul. Someone had to teach me what those pieces of tape meant. I didn't come out knowing right and wrong in that way. But I come out knowing, I come out of the womb knowing, ultimately, you can even see toddlers working this out before they have their parents' good teaching. They don't like it if you snatch their toy. They recognize that's wrong. They've been wronged.
Right. But what I'm saying with multiple different cultures over the years, over history, I think there are very few things that are fundamentally wired into us to be right and wrong.
You're correct. You're correct. And so C.S. Lewis agrees.
That's consistent. There are some consistent things. There are a lot of consistent things.
Yep.
But we, you know, if you go back 2,000 years, it was very different. More
not so different. This is what C.S. Lewis deals with, and I feel like maybe you didn't read chapter two.
I read chapter
two. Okay, so
and I still assert that in certain areas at certain times, there's very little there's not many similarities to other cultures. I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't ultimate truths of right and wrong, but I'm saying those ultimate truths I think are very specific and limited.
Okay, let's talk about that. But can we put a pin in it for just a second? So because I want to tie together what you just said and what Marilyn said, mm-hmm. which is the fundamental difference between the law of human nature and other laws of nature, like gravity or, I don't know, that a liquid will flow, is that we have a choice. We have agency over whether we choose to comply with what we know is this law of nature, of human nature. So, please listen. We have to let this sort of unfold, because this is all really hard concept for a lot of people to grasp. So I promise I'll come back.
I just wanted to mention real quickly, I think it's interesting that even though there are natural laws that are impossible to disobey, humans are always trying to.
Mm-hmm.
Are always trying to see, like, how absolute is gravity?
Right.
I bet you we could get a plane up there.
Like, right. Yeah. Well, that actually, and let's go ahead and deal with what you just explained about, I think what you're saying is, different cultures and civilizations have had different moralities,
mm-hmm.
right? So even we know that in some biblical time, multiple wives was a standard. So what C.S. Lewis, what C.S. Lewis says to that objection is there have been some differences to their moralities, but what he says is that nothing that amounts to total difference. For example, In the example of polygamy, maybe that culture agreed that it was okay to have multiple wives, but that culture did not agree that it was okay to just have any woman you want.
Some cultures did, though.
Okay. So so I know you're thinking of maybe even present day, where if a woman gets raped in the Middle East, that isn't handled in a way that we would say is appropriately, that the woman ends up getting blamed. Is that what you're thinking of, for example?
Woman gets raped in America, it's not handled.
Okay, is that what you're thinking about?
No, I mean, just I'm thinking over the entire scope of world history and the differences.
Okay, but like, you're going to have to give me some specific examples so we can tackle them.
Oh, gosh, I mean,
can we use that one as a, you know, the rape of a woman in the Middle East? Let's just use it.
Ooh, okay.
Because if you and I sit around this table and discuss if a woman is raped in the Middle East and she is blamed and she is shamed, do we believe that that's right or wrong?
In our country, I think our culture, we believe that's wrong.
Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. So by us saying that some cultures are getting it more right than others, isn't there an ultimate standard we're all working towards? By doing that, it's because we're measuring it up to something we would call an ultimate standard. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right, but if you go into a place where that ultimate standard isn't recognized, then they would not say that. And like,
agreed.
Like, and I'm saying, like, we are coming at it from a very limited perspective because we live in America and we have certain views on what is right and wrong based on our country's history, but that doesn't mean that that's a universally held view.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Let me interject. It's not a universally held view. So let's say we're looking at other cultures in the world today, or we're looking at other cultures that happened in civilization 1,000 years ago. What I'm saying, Gianna, is if we agree that some are closer to right than others, then there is a standard of right that we are appealing to by which we measure that rightness.
I don't think that you and I are saying entirely different things. Because I do believe that there is a universal truth and that there's right and wrong in that. What I'm getting at is more of, I think a lot of people want to put a divine or an ultimate standard on things that aren't necessarily ultimate or divine standards, because, you know, gosh, I don't want
to get distracted. Okay. No. I do want to talk these things out, but what I don't want is to become distracted by people who abuse what they would call divine right and wrong, because the truth of the matter is that's still an abuse. That's wrong. So what we're talking about here is just the law of human nature, the law of fair play, mm-hmm. the law of really right and wrong. So here again, we're talking about other civilizations, and how they're not so different as you might think when you look at them on the surface. Again, polygamy maybe is acceptable in some societies, but it's not okay to have any woman you want, right? So, and I hate to say this, but David in the Bible is a great example of this. So he had many, many wives, and then he took Bathsheba.
Yeah.
Because he felt like it. And then he started trying to mop up his bad decision.
Therefore with, proving that it was
yeah,
bad.
Trying yeah. to have Uriah go back and sleep with Bathsheba yeah. to cover it up, and then ultimately he made another bad decision, killing Uriah, effectively murdering Uriah, let's be honest. And at the end of the day, we can't gloss over the fact that he basically raped Bathsheba.
Yep.
I mean, so we don't, this is bad behavior. And the prophet Nathan came and pointed out to him by using a parable, which leans deeply into what C.S. Lewis is explaining. Nathan came and said a parable to David that said, a man had many sheep, another man had one. The man with many sheep took the man's one sheep. And David said, that was awful of him to do. So David was able to see this right and wrong when he was drawn out of his own decisions. And maybe David would have said, well, I'm the king. And that would be what? The list of excuses. Mm-hmm. But not really, he's not trying to justify what he did. He's not saying that standard is wrong. He's trying to say why the standard didn't apply to him mm-hmm. in that circumstance. Mm-hmm. Okay? So here, even with polygamy, it's, you know, even in a situation where it's acceptable to have multiple wives, it's not acceptable to just take anyone you want. Or here another example. In a culture, imagine a culture where selfishness is the ideal, where running away in battle is the ideal. We can't imagine that because we have basic standards that are like bravery is, you know, selflessness, standing up and doing for someone else at the cost of yourself. These are standards that we all as humans admire. We may apply them in different ways, Gianna, where, you know, we may be in what we all call a holy war if, you know, or an extremist in any religion, could stand up and you know, make bad decisions in the name of his or her religion. But there's in that culture an admiration for the fact that he's willing to stand up and sacrifice himself for the good of others or for what they all believe in.
Right. I guess what I'm saying is that I think that it boils down pretty concisely, though, to just the human standard is to treat people with kindness.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can think of examples where there are vastly different things, and that's the only thing that holds up, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
even bravery or self-sacrifice. Right. Look, self-sacrifice is not necessarily valued in American society, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad you went there, like, because I was going to go there, too.
It's do whatever you have to do to get to the top, you know, the American dream. Get on Wall Street, step on a bunch of people. Like, yeah. Like, that is not what we value.
Yeah, okay, so I'm so glad you brought that up, because I find that to be something that we should talk about in American culture as well. The idea of, man, this is a conversation we could have for weeks.
Don't let me get started on
capitalism. No, it's all the things that I wanted to talk through, because we have to go out there in the world and be able to be articulate about these things. Mm-hmm. So you're right. So let's think about capitalism in America, which is a me first mentality, right?
You should just get like a spray bottle and then get me like a cat if I
go
too far.
You're doing fine. So ultimately, capitalism is a me first mentality. Mm-hmm. It's work hard and you'll get what you deserve.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. And it has cultivated this really selfish mindset,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, whatever it takes to get ahead. And people who we would call self-made men and women who have bootstrapped, which is bootstrapping is like the American ethic. Mm-hmm. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps, right? And we apply it in all kinds of screwed up ways. For people who have been systematically oppressed, but let's again stay away from race for just a second.
We'll talk
about bootstrapping, and we appreciate the ideal of what your life is what you've made it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this doesn't apply to everybody, because some people have been systematically disadvantaged, so someone else's bootstraps are broken where mine are not.
Mm-hmm.
But that has, in my opinion, in a huge way impacted how we see absolute truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because now we have this idea of, well, that's right for you, but it's not right for me. And right is right. So when we think about, let's say, the self-made man or the self-made woman, we have this great appreciation and a broad brushstroke of, wow, he or she really came from nothing and earned, worked hard, and built something, and good for them. But when we uncover, oh, he didn't ever report his earnings on his taxes, or, oh, he stepped all over these five people on his way to the top. How do we feel about that?
Not great.
Mm-mm. It's not fair.
Not fair.
We're so glad that you joined us today as we attempt to tackle hard conversations and learn how we can use these times in our culture to point everyone to Jesus. Ultimately, he's the one who's going to make the difference in people's lives. I'm so grateful that God uses even our most natural instincts for justice to point us to Him. We are a weekly Bible study, just like you find at your local church. If you aren't involved in one, we encourage you to find a church where they are teaching from the Bible in every situation. In Matthew 10, Jesus was sending out His disciples to preach the word, and He instructed them, "Freely you have received, so freely give." We believe those words apply to us here at Study with Friends. So we have created many resources for you at our website, studywithfriends.org. Just like those disciples who relied on the generosity of others, we are also 100% donor supported. If you have been particularly blessed by any of the resources we work hard to provide, would you consider donating to our ministry? Monthly partners are especially helpful to us, and no amount is too small. If you are willing to give, we would be grateful and thankful to have it. You can donate one time or become a monthly partner on our website, studywithfriends.org/donate. We always love to hear from you, and you can do so via email at info@studywithfriends.org, or you connect with us via Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. It is always an encouragement to hear what you have to say and how the ministry is touching your life. We'll see you next time as we study with friends.